tense, nervous headache, feeling stressed, can't relax? Then escape into the world of cars with Gareth Jones on speed.
Hello, I'm Gareth. This is Gareth Jones on speed. I'm very stressed, but hopefully Alex Goy isn't stressed. Are you stressed, Alex?
Nah, hi.
And Zog, how are you feeling?
Not too stressed today. Certainly a lot more relaxed than you are.
Yeah, I'm stressed for three reasons. I need to rehome my cat. The windows I ordered three weeks ago, haven't been ordered, as it were. They were supposed to have been. I've got to prepare a speech to speak at my school on Thursday. And my PC broke yesterday, my master machine for all my work. So what I need from you two gentlemen today is to escape into the world of cars. That's what we do. We retreat into the world of cars. We hide there, don't we, sometimes? All three of us?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's different. I mean, getting in the car for a drive, you know, going somewhere for a drive has been, for me, I think for a lot of people, can be a great way of clearing your head, getting perspective on things, you know, generally helping with your, putting you in a better mood, making you feel better, helping you deal with something.
I've found driving my Cactus around North Wales at gentle speeds, because we have 20 miles per hour everywhere, actually really good for my soul. I'm very chilled. A lot of people go, oh, I've got to drive at 20 miles per hour. I go, oh, this is really nice. So, yeah, I'm with you. Driving is a great way to chill, isn't it?
I don't know if anyone's looked into it, but it would be interesting to know how much that effect that we're all recognising. How much is to do with just physically being in a different space, how much it's to do with being very much in control of things. You know, you're suddenly in your own space and you decide where you're going to go.
Yes.
And if you want to, you know, this is that physical thing, how much it has to do with you being able to just be in this physical space that you can entirely control what you're listening to, and how much is getting away from where it is that you were. I honestly wonder, has anybody researched this? I wonder.
Probably someone far, far smarter than us.
Someone academic. Zog, you've heard me say this, I'm sure. I've said it for many years. Happiness is largely about control. If you lose control of your life, you will become unhappy.
Yeah.
If you have control over, you know, your relationship, where you live, your work situation, your leisure time, whatever it is that's important to you, your hobbies, then you will be happy. And you're right, being in the car, that's your environment, that's your car, you're in control, you're happy. Alex, you're very good with mental health.
I try to be.
You found cars have saved you in the past, haven't you?
It's recently, actually. So I've worked very long and very hard on being a bright, bouncy, calm individual. I used to be very cross, I used to be very work-driven, and if work wasn't going well, then my world was over, and everything was sacrificed for the sake of work. And I could see why I did it, but I also couldn't see at the time why it was so detrimental to me. So it's taken a while to kind of figure out who I am, where my place in the world is, being not necessarily happy with my lot, because I'm very lucky to do what I do, but I also want to do more, because everyone does, it's human nature. However, a couple of weeks ago, I fell off the cliff, mental health-wise. It was a bit rubbish. You know, wasn't expecting to feel that way, wasn't expecting what happened to happen, as you do. And I was basically angry. I either had weapons-grade anxiety, or I was, like, full of rage for a week. And I don't get like that anymore. I used to, and that was when I wasn't very grown up, and it was all very sad, blah, blah, but I don't get like that, but what happened. I couldn't get out of bed, I couldn't really function, I couldn't do any of the things, because it was just, stuff was rolling around in my head and my body wasn't letting me do anything other than be a grumpy sod. But I had a shoot on the Friday with a TVR Tuscan. So I've wanted to drive one of these since I was 13. It's the one off of the late 90s, early noughties, just turned 25, that's the crux of the piece that I'm writing. I've had it in the books since, I think, March, we first talked about it, because the guy who owns it is a friend of a friend, and then we had to cancel it once, and then this was the Friday we did it, was the time we were going to do. Bear in mind that I was like this far from knocking it on the head and going, oh, I can't do that. I can't function like that. I'm very sorry. We'll do it another day. Peeled myself out of my nest. Now, I've wanted to drive one of these since I was 13. One of my big things is hand-built British sports cars. I don't hide this fact. And why would I?
We are rather aware of this, but I think, you know, it's on sympathetic ears, right? Yes. I don't think there's a British sports car that Zog and I haven't got time for, too, so we're with you.
So when I was 13, these things came out. It was the car from Swordfish, it was the car in Looney Tunes and all that. And near my late grandmother's house, my late father and I used to wander down to this dealership called Dream Machines, which sold TVRs and Lotuses. They had the Swordfish car, albeit in a different colour.
What do you mean, the Swordfish car?
So there was a film called Swordfish, sort of turn of the century, that had Hugh Jackman and other
Halle
people.
Halle Berry?
It was about hacking and some nonsense like that. But the star car was a TVR Tuscan on Preston plates in LA.
Preston plates? Yeah. That's fantastic. And when you say Tuscan, you're talking about the Speed...
I'm talking about the 1999 Speed 6.
The Speed 6, yeah.
Pre-bubbly-wobbly TVR doesn't really interest me at all. That's the sort of thing my dad would be into. No, I'm talking about the one with the flamethrower grill, two massive cans sticking out the back. Like, proper dream stuff. Anyway, I went down. I was grumbly all the way. I was muttering to myself all the way. And I basically felt like doom, death, and life of the universe and everything had come to a halt. Made it there. Met up with a mate. Spent 3 hours just photographing it static. Some of them came out not blurry, which was nice. And then we went for a drive and I spent ages taking pictures of him driving up and down, and so there's some quite nice also non-blurry or blurry adjacent ones. Then he let me have a go because that's also part of the piece, and it was just the best. Like, the whole day getting out of my headspace, getting out of the funk I was in, because not because it wasn't still there, the underlying issue was still there, but because there was a completely different need for my attention. I needed to be somewhere else to do something else, and it was entirely distracting. It just so happened that it was a car I've wanted to drive for 25 years. Damn, I'm old. But
wow. Do you know what? This has got to be the first occasion I've ever heard of someone being saved by a TVR, because usually TVRs need to be saved because they break down, don't they?
They break down, they spin. So this one, so the chap who owns this, you know, he got it. There was a spell when you could buy that generation of Tuscan for about 20 grand, but you'd never touch them unless you had another 60 for the engine rebuild, the this, the that, the this, the that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do it. But he said his engine hasn't been rebuilt and doesn't need to be rebuilt because it hasn't had that much of it. He uses it sort of semi-daily. It's a bit ratty in places. But he's had the shocks done, he's had the bonnet done so you can actually lift it, because previously you had to only get it done at...
you have to unbolt part of the bonnet, don't you? Yeah. It's a two-part bonnet, I think.
But now you don't. So there's the front bit will lean up regardless, but then you can get the second bit fixed so you can do this. So he's done that. He used it and he loved it. And tell you what, I didn't quite know what to expect. It's obviously not my car, so I was being sensible, but she's a little bit pointy. 1.6 turns lock to lock, apparently. So every time I took my hand off the wheel to change gear, a slight movement from my right hand and the whole car went, oh, we're going left now.
How many turns?
Reassuring.
1.6.
Wow.
Quick rack. Also,
that is a very
I learnt about something called hot knob.
Thank you, Vicar.
Well, is this something we can discuss?
Yes. Well, this is it.
Is this the transmission getting so hot that heat comes up through the...
Yeah. So the cats are underneath...
Of course.
The gear knob, basically. TVR, in their infinite wisdom, sorry, in its infinite wisdom, put them underneath the gear knob. And all it does is just fire heat up through the very metal gear stick.
Yeah.
So after a while of driving, when it was my turn to drive, my chum went, oh, well, you need to put some driving gloves on for this. I was like, what? You haven't been doing this. He's like, ah, no. You're going to get some hot knob.
That's fantastic. I love that.
But it's a known thing. Hot knob, very much a known thing. Your TVR gives you a hot knob.
So having met your childhood hero, how did it measure up to expectations? And would you recommend it to anybody else?
Obviously, because it wasn't my car, I didn't do a Troy Queef and spank it.
Didn't explore it as far as you might have done.
No, but with the owner's permission, there was some revving, and it's bloody quick, and it feels really nice, especially with the pointy steering. I get why people fell so foul of them when they were straight out of Blackpool. Mine had been fiddled with, it rode really nicely, it went really nicely, but Yeah, it was a very, very, very good day, and I should like to have another go, but I don't think I'll be able to afford it. But no, honestly, I left there, and I was expecting, because I was kind of my inner monologue, I was like, right, you're going to get really angry when you're about halfway home, and it was a two-hour drive. And I had to work on the Saturday anyway, so I was even unhappier about that. But, no, I felt better. Not entirely okay, but betterer. I mean, it was a temporary thing. I mean, admittedly, you know, my mental health woes have been incredibly bad before, but, you know, they are now more tempered. So I knew I just needed to ride it out and do the thing. But there's a lot about that week I can't remember. I am aware we recorded a Gareth Jones on speed, but I can't remember what I said.
Yeah, I was really surprised that you were able to do that last week.
Function.
And you made perfect sense. So I think you, as I was saying, retreated into the car world. We do that. So do you find, you know, not just driving but owning a car is good for your mental health or bad for your, not yours, anyone's mental health?
It's a mixed bag. Driving can be a mixed bag, particularly if you live in a big city, you know, in particular a city like London. You know, my personal experience is that driving a car in London over the last 25 years, you know, has definitely become more difficult and less fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I'm not having a go at low traffic neighbourhoods or ultra low emission zones, which I think, broadly speaking, the kind of measures that are pretty sensible to deal with trying to pack a lot of people and a lot of vehicles into too little space. If you don't have that mechanism that annoys some people, you're going to have some other process or non-process that annoys just as many or more people. There's no everybody is happy way of trying to fit, you know, all those millions of people and hundreds of thousands of vehicles and all those buildings into the same space. It's never going to work smoothly. So the increasing number of, you know, people and vehicles and non-expensive space has made it harder. And I certainly don't drive in London, in, you know, central London, anything like as much as I did 20 years ago. Driving outside town is more relaxing, more fun. Part of that, though, is often the reason that I'm doing that. If I'm driving, you know, outside London, I'm more likely to be going somewhere to do something fun, something other than picking up some tiles from Screwfix or, you know, whatever it is, some domestic chore, something that I have to do. It's more like something that I want to do, which kind of gets back to this control thing.
Yeah, Chuck, you mentioned the last 25 years driving has got much harder in London. I remember when I was doing The Big Bite, which was a BBC radio programme about computers in about 1992 to 94, and we had the production meetings on Friday in White City, West London, and I lived in Stoke Newington, northeast London, and it got to a point after 93, I think, where I simply couldn't get to the BBC in less than 2.5-3 hours on a Friday to do the meeting. So we shifted the meeting to Thursday, the production meeting, and I refused to go anywhere in my car on a Friday unless I was leaving London from then on. So it's been bad a long time, and it got very, very, very bad. And I think the ULEZ thing is actually made it better. The traffic is more free-flowing. I seem to remember a statistic that the traffic in London was slower in 1990-something than it was in 1920-something. You know, the horse and carts and early road cars were quicker than petrol cars of the 20th century and 21st century. It's simply due to volume of people in a small space. Mm. So the idea, like you say, of using your car to escape that pressure is going to help, yeah.
Mm.
Dream cars, right? You mentioned your Tuscan Speed 6.
Yeah.
It's also a bit of a nightmare car, isn't it? I remember being at Le Mans with you, Zog, on a train, on a tram, actually, going into town, probably on the Friday for the Parade du Pilotes, the driver's parade. And there were a bunch of TVR guys all wearing TVR shirts who'd all driven there, because in those years TVR were racing at Le Mans until fairly recently.
I mean, there's always a big TVR crowd down there anyway, because there's the British boys, I'll take my TVR, and they all get arrested on the way down, but still.
Going 200 miles per hour in a Mega Griffith or whatever it was called. But these guys were the happiest guys at Le Mans. They were over the moon happy, happier than the Dutch, happier than the Danish, happier than Audi. They were ecstatic because their cars actually made it to Le Mans. Did your Speed 6 break down in the brief time that you drove it?
It did not. It was absolutely fine. Owner Ollie said that, you know, because I was like, oh, has it broken down? It's not really. I mean, it's occasionally it does stuff. You do need to drive it. There are some idiosyncrasies about it. But it hasn't completely let him down.
Oh, glad to hear that.
To bring the story kind of up to date, what's the latest with TVR? Because I've completely lost track of, honestly, right. whether they really still exist or not, and whether that Gordon Murray, well, I'm not going to say Gordon Murray design, but Gordon Murray involved, you know, I think I read that his very clever iStream production process was involved in making the chassis. So yeah,
here's what's happened with TVR. It announced it was going to bring out a new version of the Griffith in 2017, if you remember.
Not long ago.
And then the Griffith didn't happen. Apparently, it's going to come out this year. We have heard precisely nothing about it, but it's all right because immediately after the sports car, they're going to release an electric version of the sports car, but then also a saloon and an SUV.
Oh, right. So all this is definitely going to happen quite clearly in the next three months.
So 7 years ago, we were promised one car, which is yet to arrive. But it's OK, because now four cars haven't turned up.
Yeah.
I really want it to work because I love British sports cars. I love the way they look. I love the way they handle. I love the way they feel. I wish TVR back into existence. I will it into existence. However, it is quite clear that it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Wow. I was really psyched because it was going to be a Welsh TVR. They were going to build it in Wales, and Griffith is not a bad name for a Welsh car, if you think about it. It kind of worked for me. But I'm like you. I admired TVRs. I remember being at Le Mans and doing a bit of video for On Speed and coming across a two-tone Tuscan Speed 6, you know, that was purple from one angle and silver from another, and thinking this is about as good as any car here. But they died.
I think it's interesting that TVR as a brand, as a company, seems to have a reserve of affection out there that is actually a bit out of whack with really the quality and the number of cars they've produced over the years. And now I'm saying this is kind of, as a TVR fan, but I think it is a bit striking that we're still so interested and everyone else is still interested enough. You know, there is all this, you know, affection and a lot of goodwill and some kind of ready-made market for TVRs there. They don't have to persuade as many people that this is a brand that you might trust to come up with a fun automobile. So why are you so convinced it's not going to happen, Alex? Other than the fact that it just hasn't happened and
It's been 7 years. Like, they've announced a brand partnership with Thruxton, but they haven't got a car to put round Thruxton. So what's the development cycle of a car? Say 4 years sketch to reality. So manufacturers are thinking about 4 years ahead, sometimes five, sometimes a little bit longer, sometimes not. So they know what's coming after that, but the development hasn't begun. So in theory, this TVR was in development for at least a couple of years before they announced it in 2017. Where's the car?
Yeah, sure.
We'd have seen it at Goodwood. I don't think it's ever run at Goodwood, has it, the new TVR?
It has moved. I know it's moved.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But we'd be seeing it every year, wouldn't we? Oh, the development model. Oh, the latest version. But
yeah, there's nothing. Like, it's a great shame because I think the problem is it came at just the wrong time. Or no, it came at just the right time, but the timeline they gave themselves was wrong, because they're going, right, it's a 5-litre V8, it's called the Griffith, it looks great, it does look a bit like a guppy, but I'll forgive it that. Isn't it great? Let's have a go at this, blah, 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 blah. And then the next thing you know, everyone's going electric. And like the market for big front-engine rear-drive sports cars isn't there, especially manual one. I was driving the new Ford Mustang on Friday, and I'm pretty sure that's the only manual V8 you can buy right now.
Oh, interesting. Really? Mm. Yeah. Who else is doing
V8s? Who else would do it?
Yeah. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Hey, should we talk about the Mustang?
If you want to.
It's a good segue. Let's go for it.
So, of the three of us here, you're probably the biggest Mustang fan.
Well, I don't know about that, but I love a Mustang. What car enthusiast doesn't? No, love a Mustang. We had one for a Le Mans trip 5 years ago.
Don't be too angry with me, but I'm meeting one in Paris to drive to Le Mans in a few weeks.
Oh, you were taking a Mustang to Le Mans?
Good for you.
That explains when I phoned up Ford a few... a month ago and said can I take a Mustang to Le Mans. They said we've got lots of action over Le Mans and we haven't got a spare car, and you're the action.
One of them. There's a couple of journalists going out from the UK. They're doing a big international thing, I think, so there'll be lots of coverage from lots of people, including me, for Magneto, I think, which will be most entertaining. But I've had a go in both the GT and the Dark Horse, which irritatingly, I just need to look up my power thing, so I did the proofreading for it this morning. So the GT is 446 horsepower, and the Dark Horse is 453, which seems like not much. The Dark Horse is built to be more durable, they say, but it's not ideal, because the GTs in the US get 486 horsepower, and the Dark Horses get 500. We've got loads of GPF and emissions stuff that sort of throttles them a bit. They're not slow. You know, 5.2 to 62 in a Dark Horse, even less if you got the 10-speed auto. But it'd be nice to have the full whack, wouldn't it? Remember in the 90s where Europe went, no, America, you can't have all of this. You must have less power. We don't trust you. Now it's us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. I remember throughout the 80s where you could buy an Alfa Romeo GTV6 in California, which produced, just over 100 brake horsepower or something like that. It was nearer 160 in the UK. If I remember the facts, this was the case. European cars, when they got to California, were absolutely throttled. Now it's the other way around.
Yeah.
How fascinating. California, America, catch up.
Yeah, we lose a tenth of the power, but it's not slow. Tell you what, it sounds bloody brilliant. It sounds ace. It's like low down, it sounds quite gurgly and old school VAC and a little bit like lumpy. But then you get it above 4,500 RPM and it just starts to scream. It's great. And you just keep going forward and forward and forward and forward and forward. And the Dark Horse has a Tremec 6-speed, so you just kind of lump it from ratio to ratio. You can flat shift going up and it'll rev match going down. So you can be a bit of a hero in it if you want.
Man, you're a NASCAR driver.
And it does have a couple of features. There's a tricky little thing with the handbrake, isn't there? They seem to be leaning into the last days of disco. Yeah, bye-bye petrol, we're doing the last
thing. It looks like a normal bar, except there's not the button on the front, so it's still an electronic handbrake. You just yank it, and you can. There's a drift mode, so you can be a little bit irresponsible with it, should you wish to, on a racetrack. And it'll do big skids.
Good for that.
I'm a huge fan of the Mustang.
I find it interesting that on the one that we had on our Le Mans car, I mean, that had this line lock feature that just makes it easy to do burnouts.
Still do that, yep. This has a drag strip mode as well.
And it's interesting that these cars tend overwhelmingly to be bought by enthusiasts and nostalgists. And, you know, they're not trying to sell a new car, you know, something that's forward looking.
No.
This is a very backward looking car, but in the best way.
Yeah, there's absolutely no airs or graces about it. They're not saying, oh, well, this is a vehicle for the future. They're like, you know, people wanted a V8 rear drive Mustang, and they will get a rear drive V8 Mustang.
Give the people what they want.
We've tried to update the design. The one thing that did say it was quite interesting was so the interior is a big screen. And there's a few kind of more digital elements to it. And the old one, of course, had that kind of twin barrel thing, and it had those fake rocker switches, which were just awful. The interesting thing is, they were sort of preempting us going, oh, why have you made it a big screen? Because people don't like big screen. They're like, we focus grouped it. We spoke to Gen Z and we spoke to millennials, two people who we actively want to buy the car. They don't want older Mustang fans not to buy it, but they need to pursue the new market. And bear in mind, millennials now are knocking on 40 or even over 40. We should be able to afford these things. But considering they start at 50-odd grand, no, can't do that.
Ford are very good at focus grouping their cars. You know, they spend a lot of time thinking about it. They thought long and hard about the heritage of the Mustang brand. They made an announcement recently, we will always make a Mustang that is extreme, or they said something like that, you know, and then they stretched the Mustang to be the Mach-E, which was a bold and successful move by the looks of things. But you're absolutely right. There's no point hanging on to heritage if it's stopping you from selling cars to the new market. You remember how Bernie Ecclestone said, oh, young people don't buy Rolex watches.
But they will one day, you prick.
Exactly. And if, you know, you don't look after the grassroots, the people coming up, you're literally guaranteeing the end of that brand, aren't you? Right? You have to stay focused. The Mustang should be a car for the, what we used to call the PlayStation generation.
I am one of those.
There you are. Yeah. To the future with Mustangs.
Yeah, no, to be honest, it's a mega thing. It's a bit lumpy, it's a bit bumpy, but it's just as you would expect a Mustang to be, but it's got CarPlay.
Yeah, and it's a working class car. It's a blue collar car.
That's what I think. £50,000
over here, but in America, it's a lot more of a blue collar car. Hey, Sog, you like this? I was walking up the Sychnant Pass Road the other day, and I came across a. Is it bottle green? What do we call that green? But the bullet edition of the sixth generation Mustang, a limited edition version they did in the colour, that green that the original
it's
Mustang
called Highland Green.
Is that what it is? Highland Green. I can't believe I didn't take a photo of it to send to you immediately. But I stood round looking at the car. I couldn't believe I was seeing one parked on a country road in North Wales.
A quiet road in North Wales. Yeah, oh, I love seeing a Mustang in the wild. It must have warmed your heart.
Yeah, it absolutely did. I spent 5 minutes looking at it, and also parked right next is an ID Buzz. There are loads of electric cars I'm noticing, and there's a row of houses I walk past, and there must be four electric cars with charging points all along there. But the ID Buzz looks amazing in the flesh. Yeah, sorry, I leapt from Mustang to ID Buzz there. But where else could they go with a Mustang? That's the question. You know, Ford have moved it into EVs. Could there be, I'm poking here, could there be a Mustang estate? Could there be a Mustang city car? Could there be a Mustang MPV? Your thoughts, go Zog.
My first thought is that, in a way, I think they're doing as much as they can with the Mustang brand. In the first place, the Mach-E thing, whilst putting a Mustang badge on that vehicle is to some extent kind of messing with the Mustang legacy, really, in that, you know, the Mustang is a muscle car. The Mach-E is a sensible electric vehicle. They're sticking a Mustang badge on that in order to give it higher visibility and to help the marketing of it. And that was, I think, very successful. I think I don't have a problem with them doing it, but it is undoubtedly, you know, messing with the Mustang legacy, I think. But that's okay, you know. But they are also, and maybe this is part of what makes it okay, I think, to me, that they're they are on the tail end of the internal combustion engine driven vehicle. They are carrying on making big, loud, fun Mustangs. So, yeah. Keep on keeping on.
Alex, you haven't driven the Mach-E, have you?
Yet? I have. I drove it last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I borrowed one for a few... Well, I wasn't planning on borrowing one, but I was shooting one static talking about Blue Cruise. And they said, oh, well, obviously take it up and demonstrate it because we're filming a thing. And then they went, oh, just keep it for a few days, bring it back as and when. I was like, oh, okay, I'll do that. That sounds nice. And it's really good. I get the gripe about it not being a Mustang, but I think that along those lines... I think it's like people griping that the BMW Mini isn't a proper Mini. No, it isn't. But
it's a good thing in its own right. You know, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
You might not like that it has that badge on it, but this is a good thing. Yeah.
Here's a question. It occurred to me the other day. What year did the new Mini come out? Was it 90...
It was 2000 or 99, I think. Hang on. To the internet. Hold, please.
Because the original Mini was around 40 years before it was replaced. And that means the, quote... new Mini is halfway there already. That's a pretty good legacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
First new Mini was July 2001. There you are.
Okay, there you go. Wow, 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, almost halfway. We shouldn't really call it the new Mini. That's like calling the new guy in Depeche Mode the new guy. Who's that, Zog? Who's the guy who joined after Vince Clarke left?
Alan Wilder.
Yeah, he's the new guy.
So yeah, I was going to be because Alan Wilder left Depeche Mode. Well, this was a few years ago now. I my brain was doing a sudden bit of hang on. Did somebody step in to replace Alan Wilder, and I missed that? Yeah. He's made some very good solo albums, incidentally, Alan Wilder.
Okay, we'll look into that. The Mustang continues. I wish them well at Le Mans this year in the GT3 class. They had a passable time at Spa, I remember. I'm not sure how well it went, but it's a good sound. That's what you want
to
hear.
No, looking forward to that. No, I will report back when I return. I get back on the Monday after. So when am I going? Yeah, I get back on Monday the 17th. So I shall report back then, or maybe the 18th when I'm home.
Alex, you've got 2 minutes to tell us about the funniest little car that you've probably ever driven. It's a Bentley like no other, right?
Right, my friends. If I've got 2 whole minutes, let me fill these 2 minutes with wonder and joy. There's a company based in Oxfordshire called The Little Car Company. They make tiny scale versions of cool cars. They did a Bugatti Type 35, an Aston Martin Vantage, Ferrari Testarossa J. Its most recent product, though, is a Bentley Blower. They call it the Bentley Blower Junior. It's 85% scale of the original Bentley Blower, which still means it's as long as a Mark 1 Volkswagen Golf. It's huge.
I imagined it to be about the size of a go-kart. No, I didn't realise it was that big.
No, it's because it's 85%, like the Aston is a similar scale, but that makes it tiny. So that its other products aren't road legal, but the Blower is. So you can drive it to the pub. It's got seat belts and everything. It's got a number plate. It's technically a quadricycle, so it's got 15 kilowatts of power, 10.8 kilowatt hour battery, and it'll do 45 miles an hour. They say it'll top out at 60 miles of range, but they also say that's a bit of a clever lie and you'll get more like 45 out of it. But at least they're honest. It's decently quick. It's got 3 drive modes. So the Blower itself is huge. It's a hulking great thing. And it takes up. It's got a massive footprint. But because its wheels are quite far out, the cabin itself is tiny. So two people can sit side by side, but not necessarily comfortably. So in the 85% scale one, you can sit two, but it's got to be in tandem. So you've got a central driving position, which means it's almost certainly the cheapest brand new central driving position car ever built at £90,000.
How much did you say?
It's £90,000.
£90,000. Okay.
Yes, it's a lot
this
of thousands
is a
of pounds.
Bargain. Bargain.
Yeah.
It's a big toy.
It's a very big toy. It was very cool. It handled decently. Like it's got the same tyres as my Morgan three-wheeler. So, and I know that means, one, they're tubed, and two, if you go into a corner too far, you'll be able to see the tyre start to peel itself away from the wheel, and it's at that point you have to go...
Well, you know, it's good to have this kind of feedback on how much you're pushing the performance limits of your vehicle. This is a good thing.
Pushing the boundaries of a Bentley Blower. But it was absolutely mega. I had it for a couple of hours. I drove it from Shepherd's Bush to the Tate Britain and met some lovely people. Lots of people had questions about it and wanted to know all about it. And it was just a lovely time. I mean, it's a pointless vehicle unless you have a garage and space for it and can take it out. Because it's not a road legal because it's a quadricycle. It's like a Renault Twizy. So don't drive it on a motorway because you'll have a bad time. But Gareth, you used to live in London, Zog, where you and I live. You know, to nip to the shops or to nip up and down to see a friend, it would be perfect, so long as it's not raining, because of course there's no roof or doors.
That would just be hilarious, though.
It's the best.
85% scale Bentley Blower. I can imagine what it looks like. It would just look like an oversized driver in a kid's car in some way.
I saw some of your pictures, Alec. They seem to have done a cracking job on recreating.
Oh, it's the thing about the Little Car Company in general is that all of the vehicles are they're formally licensed. These are legit vehicles. So the Ferrari is sold in Ferrari dealerships. It's sold as a Ferrari product. Same, the Aston is sold in Aston dealerships. Bugatti partnered with every Bugatti dealership. There's details that they've got the pedals out of a Veyron in it, I think, and it's an officially sanctioned thing. It's not a Spugatti or an Aston Mitten or anything like that. These are legit products that use the right badges, the right bits. So when Bentley said, all right, we'll do it, but it's got to be road legal. They did it.
They had to make it road legal.
And it's great. But it is, you know, so all the details are pretty much right. There's a few things missing. Never, I have driven the original blower. It was terrifying. But there are two taps in the cabin that regulate oil flow through the motor. Those obviously aren't in there. The fuel pump, which is a big wooden knob thing, that's obviously not needed, but that's okay because that's how you switch the drive modes. There's a little switch. I can't remember what it does in the original, but in that it's, you know, drive, reverse, neutral. On the floor, there's a horn that goes like that, like the old school thing. But it's all been done with, like, via Bentley, through Bentley's blessing. It's a legit car.
Didn't the actual Bentley blower have the pedals in a weird order?
Yes, it did. But thankfully, because only two of the pedals need to work, not really a problem.
I was going to say they should have swapped them anyway.
Please, right? No. Yeah. Please, no.
Drive across legs. Do you know what, boys? At the start of this programme, you saw my grimace, right? I was feeling tense. But you have both cheered me up with tales of exotic, interesting, beautiful, happy, smiley cars.
Excellent.
And I'm grateful to you, Alex Goy.
You're welcome.
And I'm grateful to you, Zogger.
Always a pleasure.
Guys, thank you. You've saved my soul, and I hope, listeners, your soul has been saved too. Speak to you in another couple of weeks for more on speeding. Say bye-bye, boys.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Gareth Jones on Speed! Speed!